श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौरनित्यानंद की जय, श्री गौर गदाधर की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री गौराध माधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्राह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर परमानंद हरि हरि बोल। गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल कनेक्टेड ऑनलाइन प्रेजेंट फिजिकली हियर एवरीवन एंड कंटिन्यू विद आवर सीरीज ऑन श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति और द प्रेयर्स ऑफ श्री ब्रह्मा आफ्टर ब्रह्म विमोहन लीला। टुडे वी आर इन Class 41, we will be studying verse 39. So we have been spending one class per verse, but in the beginning we had two introductory classes. That's why we have two extra more, and probably we'll have two conclusion classes at the end of the last verse after that. But today we are reaching the end of the verse, the penultimate verse, verse 39, where we will see how Brahma is asking permission to leave, after presenting his case, if you will, his prayers. But let's first, as usual, do a brief summary of yesterday's lecture, yesterday's verse 38, where basically Brahma affirmed in a very Socratic way that the only thing he knows is that he doesn't know. But now he fully knows that he doesn't know. Fully with you, before we may think fully that we know, being fooling ourselves, I know, then I fully know that I don't know. So that's a big step. No? Although it seems you are going backwards, you are actually advancing. So he said, those who say that they know, let them know what to do. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. So Brahma is trying to finish his case here by realizing, I don't know, I thought I knew. Some other people may think like that, but I don't know. The only way you can be known is not by the head. I have four of them. I've tried my best. It doesn't work. So this verse constitutes also an indirect praise of bhakti as the way to know Krishna. Bhakti aham ikaya graha. Krishna says, I'm only known by bhakti. There's no other way. There's no other way. No other way. Nastiva, nastiva, nastiva. So gyan is rejected in that way here as well as in other parts previously in the Brahma Stuti. And the case is made once again in the conclusion here as bhakti is a perfect means to know the absolute, in terms especially absolute in his form as Krishna, who is the most loving side of the absolute. In intimacy, love is totally only required there. There's nothing else that is required. Any other thing will get in the way of that. So how much bhakti is required for addressing this unique face of the absolute? So by pronouncing this verse again, Brahma is not only praising bhakti indirectly, but he's also deprecating, to begin with, his own self. I think some minutes ago I thought I knew, now I realize I don't know. He's also again deprecating those jnanis whom I think we know Krishna. He's a temporary manifestation of Nirgun Brahman. So yeah, we know. No, you don't know, basically. Or also we added the extra layer that this verse could refer to Vaishnavas, Gaudiyas, who may take for granted Krishna consciousness and think they know. Well, actually, that should never happen. We should always continue our spirit of exploration. There is no end to how many layers are waiting for you in every aspect of bhakti. So Brahma then says that when he says this, invokes this classical idea of body, mind, words, it can have two explanations also, although the two of them are connected. One is my body, my mind, with my words, I cannot reach you, understand you. Or I cannot understand, Krishna, your body, your mind, your word. Your body is unlimited, as we say, it's localized, but all-pervading. Your words, I don't know, I haven't heard a single one of them coming from your mouth till now. And therefore, I don't know what's in your mind. And so these two implications are there. Also, we spoke a little bit about how those things that are difficult to know from our mind, words, and limited capacities, we can know them through revelation. And we spoke a little bit about how through revelation, which that things which are inconceivable become less inconceivable or conceivable to a certain degree, although it's not that we will understand everything at one point, because, again, Krishna himself is in that process for eternity. You know? The glimpsing and conceiving the dimension, the unlimited dimension of his own self, that's his most select project in Nityanavadu. There is a special laboratory in eternity for that, where God is totally dedicated to exploring the depths of his own reach, and no need for another new planet or new section, because there's no end there, and that laboratory is open 24/7. So in that verse also, in yesterday's verse, the word Prabhu was used, in the previous verse to that one as well, which means many things, master or this or that. And with this, Brahma also refers to Krishna, or you who exist, Bhava, Prabhu, in a very eminent way. You who exist not alone, basically. You are a company, you are adorned by a whole host of associates. You are decorated by your entourage, your parishads. And in connection to those parishads, especially the Brajavasi, that Brahma is like kind of discovering now. And by discovering the Brajavasi, he's discovering Krishna as a Brajavasi, because the two are inseparable from one another. That he thought, he knew Krishna, but now he didn't know that Krishna was a Brajavasi to the degree that he's starting to realize. And he's saying the glories of these Brajavasis is beyond my reach. And she says to Krishna, it's also beyond your reach. No, it's overwhelming for both of us. I can see that. You are also overwhelmed by the degree of their love. As Brahma asked before Krishna, how you'll repay back to them? And Krishna, no reply. Maybe we could say that he didn't reply after that because he's still thinking about how to reply to that question of Brahma. It's not that he has anything against Brahma, but Brahma asked a very good question. How will you repay back? And then Brahma is waiting. You're not saying anything. And Krishna kind of say, well, you make such a nice question. I mean, I'm still thinking about that. Wait a minute. Wait 20 more chapters and I will say something. So Brahma started his whole stuti or prayers with prayers, basically, in a very humble way and addressing Krishna and the most worshipable object and so on. So in the same way he began his whole series of words by praying, because in between he makes a lot of philosophical Siddhantic points, but he begins humbly addressing Krishna and praying to him. He will conclude in a similar way here. Especially, as we say yesterday, due to Krishna's silence. Krishna's not replying, he's not saying one word. We explained why, different possibilities there, but we could say the main point here is, what's this word in English? I want to find that yesterday it didn't come. Inscrutability. What do you have this word in English? Inscrutable?
Unscrutable.
Unscrutable, sorry. So, unscrutability.
Stretch.
Okay, you get my point. Unscrutable, yeah. Like someone who is very grave and you don't know what they are thinking, actually. No? So, God is like that. You cannot just, like, cheaply, easily understand what's going on with him. He's a very mysterious personality. Because love is the greatest mystery. So, if the ultimate face of God is drenched in that love, it has to be pretty mysterious. So, and Brahma wants to enter that, and Krishna's trying to make that point. Okay, this is mysterious. But nonetheless, we should have full trust that nonetheless, if despite Krishna's not saying anything, he's fully understanding Brahma's intention, reading his heart, and making all the arrangements for the necessary things to happen to take place. So let's go to today's verse. Today's verse will be a penultimate verse of the Brahma Stuti. And here, as we say, Brahma will ask permission to leave from Krishna after tons of silence from his side. And in that context, not only we'll say that, but we'll ask permission to leave, but also we'll praise Krishna's again, majesty, supremacy. And he will make a very interesting offering from his side, like farewell offering before leaving. So let's go to the verse. And I'll recite it first in Sanskrit. This is again in Anushtub Chanda, the same meter as the last ones. So I'll recite once and then we can repeat it all together. Anujanihi mam Krishna sarvam tvam betsi sarvadrik tvam eva jagatam natho jagat etattavarpitam. Anujanihi mam Krishna sarvam tvam betsi sarvadrik tvam eva jagatam natho jagad etat varpitam. So, translation of the verse says like this. O Krishna, please allow me to live. You, the seer of everything, know everything. Indeed, you are the master of all the universes. And yet, although it is already yours, I offer this one universe unto you. So that's today's penultimate verse of the Brahma Stuti, in which again Brahma is asking, begging permission to leave and acknowledging Krishna's omniscience, omnipotence of this omnis, master of all universes. And in this context, you are the master of every universe, even included this one, but somehow I offer this whole universe to you. So we will of course explain what's the meaning of that. Because if it's already Krishna's, why you are doing, giving it to him and so on. So let's go to the word by word before entering into the different commentaries. So I'll repeat different words and we can repeat after. Anujanihi mam.
Anujanihi mam.
Allow me to leave.
Allow me to leave.
Krishna.
Krishna.
Oh Krishna.
Oh Krishna.
Sarvam.
Sarvam.
Everything.
Everything.
Tvam Betsi.
Tvam Betsi.
You know.
You know.
Sarvadrik.
Sarvadrik.
The seer of everything.
The seer of everything.
Tvam.
Tvam.
You.
You.
Eva.
Eva.
You, only.
Only.
Jagatam.
Jagatam.
Of all the universes.
Of all the universes.
Nataha.
Nataha.
The master.
The master.
Jagat etat.
Jagat etat.
This universe.
This universe.
Tava.
Tava.
To you.
To you.
Arpitam.
Arpitam.
Is offered.
Is offered.
Okay. We will, many names of Krishna here also, apart from the name Krishna itself, we will say them. Like Sarvadrik, All Seer, and Jagatam Nata, it's another way of saying Jagannath, basically, Lord of all universes, and so on. So, let's begin with our Guru Maharaj's Bhavanuvad, Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvad, his commentary to the Brahma Stuti, which will be included in his forthcoming book, Chakimandala. So he says like this. Then, I mean, all this is continuation with the previous verses. Then, humbled by all that has been revealed to him, Brahma asks permission to depart. Although he longs for residence in Braj, he knows that he must engage in bhajan, arising out of the tattva he has espoused, in order to attain a suitable form in which to do so. While in his present four-headed form, he rightfully feels out of place. However, he steps decidedly in the right direction, away from his ego as a controlling, world-creating God, and referring to Krishna as he who knows and sees all, and as he who is the master of the universe, Brahma offers what he previously thought to be his world, to its actual proprietor. So that's Guru Maharaj's commentary in this verse, very insightful. So let's share some words about that, and then we will continue with other tikkas, other commentaries. Mm-hmm. So again, this is very, very, very big example for us sadhakas. No, I mean, all these verses, and this section is very important for every one of us because of many things, but we could say one of them because, I mean, Brahma is a sadhaka, who is a hankering for perfection, and so we are. No, I mean, not to just put ourselves in the exact same position as Brahma, but in a general way, sadhaka aspiring for sadhana siddhi, the perfection through practice. So since Brahma represents that and is going through many of the experiences of the sadhaka, if you will, or exhibiting many of the appropriate qualities to invoke at different stages, that's a very crucial section of the Bhagavatam for us. Now, he's showing, like, in a very interesting way, like, the internal trajectory or the emotional trajectory that every sadhaka has to go through in order to become sadhana siddha. We are sadhakas, but the hope is to become sadhana siddha, perfected through practice. So again, he begins with the messiness, but the beauty of the messiness, as we know, in the context of grace. No, I'm a mess, but God bless this mess, no, as they say in the US. God bless this mess, as they say in the US. That's even right. Even if the US is a mess, God bless this mess. So there's messiness. He's acknowledging his messiness. That's a very important section of the process. And the beauty of acknowledging the messiness in the context of grace, that actually the grace itself is allowing me to see the messiness. And that's why it can be beautiful. Not only because, yeah, we could say that. My messiness is beautiful because I'm seeing that through the light of grace. So I'm ascribing beauty to my messiness. Actually, because of the light that the type of shedding light that is falling on that. No? So, and because through that, Brahma is being enlightened about his own mischief. No? So we need to be enlightened about our own mischievous inner dynamics. No? Because first of all, we have to acknowledge the ones that we can see, because we can see some, and we may not be willing to see in that direction. And then we have to be willing to discover the layers of mischievousness and messiness that may be there, but we need light to illuminate that section. So Brahma is showing that willingness, that integrity, that disposition. And then when all that happens, humility and repentance are there in place in the heart of Brahma. He's becoming humbled by that. He's expressing proper repentance, not neurosis, proper repentance without whip of any sort. And he's expressing all that in the context of taking shelter in his Gurudev. Krishna is Brahma's guru, don't forget. Here we have a guru-sisya dynamics, guru-disciple exchange in Brahma's Stuti. Krishna is the guru, Brahma is the disciple. So the grace of Sri Guru is there, no? The presence of Sri Guru, the grace. And in that context, Brahma is expressing all the things. And then he's presenting all this Siddhanta, so foundational to our Sampradaya. And he's making the point, as Gumara is saying here, Brahma already exposed all the tattva, but now he needs to engage in bhajan to realize that tattva. But first, the foundation of Siddhanta tattva has to be there. To the Bhava project, to the Bhava temple, to the temple of divine love, as Gurmash has to say, there's no proper foundation. The Bhava temple will be just like mundane emotionality and will collapse after a few days, if you will. And then, as we say, Brahma is acknowledging, I need to practice to attain my desired ideal. This may take some time, as we will see. It didn't happen in one weekend. It didn't happen immediately after he prayed to Krishna. Krishna didn't reply. So patience has to be there. Again, sincere acknowledgement, patience, Brahma is being patient, as we'll see, but also he has this sincere acknowledgement of where I am, how far I may be from my goal, but also how much I want to attain that goal. Brahma is in proper place with all the things. He's not a sahaja rushing to something that is yet beyond his situation. He's saying, now I have to leave. I'd like to stay to be a Vrajavasi forever, but I realize it's not the moment. So I have to leave to do the necessary things to return eventually properly. So with all these stances, attitudes, Brahma is showing the proper example how to, he's the guru of our Sampradaya, basically, original, if you want to put it like that, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So also he's showing this, how much we must be willing to engage in bhajan for that to happen. Whatever I need, I would like to happen at some point, but I feel I'm far. Okay, but what I'm doing now to get closer to that to happen at some point. So Brahma is realizing all the things here and accepting all the things. He's not insisting to Krishna, allow me to stay here, let me be a Vrajavasi as soon as I can. He's saying, no, I know this is a very big thing, deep thing, there is a price to pay. I don't want to take this cheaply, I don't want to take this for granted. I will retire now and engage in bhajan. So someday I can stay here, not just camp for a visit and do some mess. But so in other words, the longing for Braj, the longing for Vrajavab, the longing for this eternal attainment that Raga Nuga Bhakti offers, has to play itself out in a very realistic, mature, serious, patient, surrender way, not sahajism. That's why our church smashed sahajism so much. No? Because sahajism is running to that without proper adhikar. And we see Brahma is not doing that. He offered very nice prayers, like many, maybe none of us could offer ever. So we could, and we are thinking, I'm already there, I want to be there as soon as possible. And he offers such prayer, but he feels, no, I have to take a distance from this. So I appreciate that in the proper, I get too close to this and I misread the whole thing. So I may need to take some distance, as we always speak, detachment in the proper direction to properly appreciate that. So whenever I address that again, it will be with right attitude, right conception. And meanwhile, in my situation, I will accept whatever rules will help me to attain the object of my greed. And that's a very serious way of expressing Raga Bhakti. Raga Bhakti is not that I reject everything and I'm just carried away by my emotions. Because if you are not very advanced, good luck with being carried away by your emotions. You will have emotions, but they will throw you to I don't know where. So in Raga Bhakta also will follow rules, but understanding all these rules are helping me to attain the object of my greed. With that awareness, with that discernment, and so on. So again, first there is proper conceptual orientation. Then we'll come acting accordingly to that conceptual orientation. First become informed, educated, then organize your lifestyle around your education, if you will. And then you will attain whatever you want to attain. Then Brahma's four heads will eventually transform into a very beautiful Gopa Sarup. But first, second, third. Not all, everything in order. So Brahma, okay, has Siddhanta in place. He has exposed our tattva very nicely. Okay, Sambandha is in place now. Before that, he didn't understand something, but now by Krishna's grace and his sincerity, he made it clear he knows the Siddhanta. He obtained his Bhakti Shastri title. But now it's time for bhajan. Now you have to live accordingly to what you just said. So go to your bhajan kutri in Brahma Loka. Enter, close the door and cry, learn to cry. You know, apply those teachings in practice. And then the four heads that do not allow Brahma to stay in Sakyarasa and Braj with four heads, that's too much. One head will disappear, second, third, and the only head that remains will also be transformed into very, again, enchanting Gopa Sarup, which of course there will be some interceding in between with Gaur Lila as a necessary experiences we will see in our following classes, and Brahma becoming Haridas Thakur and that promoting ultimate perfection as well. So, and again, Brahma, by saying all this, as we will see, it's not that, again, Krishna is cruel, oh poor Brahma, oh victim consciousness for Brahma. No, it's not like that. Everything is in place. No, and even when Krishna is seeing, being called here Sarvadrik, you are the seer of everything, you know everything. Brahma is expressing with this, you know everything, so you know what's in my heart, you know which are my intentions, so I have full confidence that you know that, and that you won't, how to say, you won't abuse your omniscience. The fact that you know what's in my heart will make you act accordingly or reciprocate and help me not to abuse and exploit my ideal. Rakshishyatiti vishvaso guptriti vananandata. I have full confidence that you will protect me. So in this case, you will protect me if you will make the arrangements to grant the object of my greed. So I have full trust in Krishna's intention, Brahma is implying with saying, you know everything here. No? Although you remain silent, although you are not saying a word, you know what's in my heart. I know that. You already showed that to me in so many ways. So similarly, as we say in our japa retreat, we're very careful never to cast doubts about God's intentions, about what He's thinking, feeling, arranging, but how. We should all direct all the doubting capacity in our own approach to He who knows everything and so on. Because if not, we are... Yeah, digging our own grave, if you will, as they say. Because Krishna himself made it clear over and over again in Shastra, I reciprocate accordingly, I nami bhakta pranashati kantiya prantiya nihi, say to Arjuna, boldly declare my devotee never perishes, neha vikramanasti pratyavaya nabi, he who threads the path of bhakti is never destroyed, whatever he attains is never lost. Satyam, what they say, Satyam te pratiyane priyosime, the conclusion of the Gita. I promise you about this. So he makes this type of strong words. I promise, you promise. His promises in the Gita to Arjuna, he has Arjuna also promise in my name. From both sides, Krishna makes this point that my devotee will always be successful if he is sincere. So Brahma is sincere, Krishna is silent, but Brahma is sincere. Brahma, sincerity means he knows that Krishna knows. So that's enough. I shouldn't demand more, expect more, ask more. I want this to happen in this way, in this moment. That's not in your domain, in your command. That's on his sweet will, however he considers, whenever he considers. And meanwhile, we should trust. We should increase our faith while waiting for him. It's not that you are waiting for him to do something. Only when he does something nice, I increase my trust in him. Oh, thank you, Krishna. Now I have more faith in you. But for the last year, I was waiting, nothing happened, and my faith was like, no, ideally it should happen. Like the waiting process, the patience experience should nourish our faith, our confidence. So, and for all this to happen, again, as Brahma concludes this prayer, it's also very crucial from us, again, not to doubt on himself, but to explore our own integrity, moving away from our false sense of self, you know, being willing to discover all the faults, all the upadis, all the ways that we are misreading who we think we are, basically. Like Brahma is showing here in the last part of the verse, when he's renouncing his false sense of mamata, his false sense of possessiveness, by saying, this is my universe. I mean, he may have thought like that before. I'm Brahma. I'm the God of the universe or something. Now he's saying, I'm giving this universe to you. By, you know, like renouncing false sense of possessiveness with the hope that someday he may acquire a real sense of possessiveness because he wants to enter into the Braj. And Braj is the land of mamata, of possessiveness, but towards Krishna, which is mine. My friend, my this, my that. But you cannot attain that if you are carrying your own list, long list of what you think is yours. So first that has to be in place. So Brahma is, again, put on the shelf in order. So this universe is not mine. So it's not easy to realize that. We are not Brahma. We don't have a universe. We may have just one bicycle and a few things over there. It's mine. No, it's so difficult to let it go, no? Like a t-shirt or who knows, you are so attached to your t-shirt or to your shoes or to your whatever, you name it. Now has a whole universe. He said, no, it's not mine, it's yours. So I am giving, again, instead of offering the universe, because he already said, you are Jagatanata, no? You are the Lord of all universes, so you are the actual owner. So by this act of offering the universe to you, is I'm surrendering my false sense of proprietorship to you. No, I'm engaging in Atma Nivedana, this very important limb of Sharanagati. When one offers oneself to Krishna, I belong to you and nothing belongs to me. Again, this is not the ultimate attainment of full possessiveness in Braj, but you have to begin somewhere. And Atma Nivedana means I don't belong to myself, basically. And nothing belongs to me, not even myself. Nothing belongs to me, not even myself. Who I belong to? Everything belongs to someone else, and I belong to that someone else. And with that belonging plays out, you start to think, and you belong to me, in a particular loving relationship. So Brahma, in the past, in the Shastra, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, these also famous stories there, no? You need to go through some of those shock treatments, no? Because you are a big person, so you need some humility, humus, as you said the other day. Humus means like soil. Come back on earth. You are too high over there. No? This famous story where Brahma once visits Krishna in Dwarka, when he's performing his lila on earth, and Krishna is in Dwarka, and Brahma is going there, and someone tells Krishna, Brahma arrives and says, I came to have audience of Krishna, darshan. So the officer, the people in the gate say, okay, we'll tell him 1 minute. So he said, Brahma has come. And Krishna say, which Brahma? So they ask him, which Brahma is he? So the other one, or the other person comes and says, Krishna is asking, which Brahma? And Brahma is like, I mean, I'm Brahma. What do you mean by which Brahma? I'm Brahma. He thought, I'm the only one. I'm Brahma, the master of this universe. There was this type of I am Brahma. Another Brahma Vimohan Lila will play out here. No? So, and he enters, of course, and meets Krishna. He had some question in mind for Krishna. So Brahma, Krishna said, what did you come to ask, Brahma? Welcome. I have one question, but first, now I have another question first. Quite more burning. And it's, why did you ask which Brahma? I mean, I'm Brahma, the well-known Chaturmukh, four-headed Brahma. Oh, you think you are the only one? Okay, so he kind of invokes all the other Brahmas from other universes, and most of them have 8 heads, 16 heads, millions of heads. I need to say, the more heads the Brahma has, the bigger the universe is. And Brahma was like having this, again, another Vimohan Lila, some like show of Aishwarya in relation to himself in this case, realizing, wow, I'm the smallest of all, in one sense. He never found a three-headed Brahma or two-headed, and all of them have more than four. So he was like, no? Okay, back on track. So in that sense, Brahma is showing in this verse, going back to the verse, this type of humility, and I'm not the owner of the universe. You already showed that to me. And so these type of things are there always mentioned. So anyhow, let's go in connection to this. Let's continue with the ancient commentaries, beginning with Sridhar Swami, who will make a point in this same connection of the last part of the verse, Brahma offering the universe. So Sridhar Swami says, relinquishing his conceit of being the Lord of the world, Brahma speaks, saying, the locus of possessiveness, the world, and this body are offered to you. That's Sridhar Swami's counter, making the same point with another words. Now, the locus of possessiveness now are generally mamatized, related. The world, my body, I am my body, and this. All that the sense of I and mine could be tied to, I'm like redirecting that to you. I want to have, this world is not mine, this body is not mine. I want to have a body that is tied to you, in your lila. This is not my world. I want to enter your world. Also, that's the idea of giving, of not rejecting, but denying identification with this body, this world, wanting identification with another body and another world, understanding the necessity for going through this process for that to happen. His Brihad Vaishnav Tosani, let's go to what Sanatana Goswami says. he will also emphasize the experience of humility that Brahma is going through here. He says, with the disappearance of all pride, because of a special mercy of Krishna arising from Brahma's prayer, being most humble, Brahma requests to leave for his abode here. So, this is the beginning of Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He makes a good point. He says, Brahma's pride has totally disappeared because of a special mercy arising from Krishna, which came as a result of Brahma's prayers. So the point is, Krishna is replying. Although in silence, but making pride disappear. I mean, that's a pretty nice reply. If you suddenly don't have any more pride, wow, that's mercy. That's a reply. So he's replying in silence, but in silence he's taking away all your pride. That's important. And we should also take the same mood. Sometimes we may not hear Krishna directly, but some circumstances come to our life that are taking away our pride. Or maybe that's Krishna's reply to my prayer. He says in the bottom, to those I want to favor, I gradually deprive them from all their wealth. Which wealth means what you think is wealth. Artha. What you think is artha, but it's actually anartha. So I'll deprive you from that. Gradually, shanai. Gradually, in a sustainable way. It will take you out of the comfort zone, but it's sustainable, it's possible. And that's my mercy to you. That's how Krishna may be speaking to us in this particular stage. So it's an important point to make it clear again. Krishna is not cruel, Krishna is not indifferent, Krishna is not a chastiser god or something, but he is actually reciprocating. His reciprocation may take different forms, but he is. Reciprocate. We should have firm faith that's taking place. How that's taking place, that's another thing, and we should be attentive to catch that, because we may be losing that reply. But that's the reply is coming. No, it's not that he forgot. No, he neglected. He is there. He's sending whatever we need to receive, but we have to be attentive to receive what we need to receive. Be careful of being too attached to thinking, I know what I need to receive. That's the problem there. Krishna knows what we need to receive and he's sending that. And probably that's what sometimes we feel, I don't need this to happen in my life. As we say, and we pray to Krishna, please Krishna, take this obstacle from my life. And he will say, that was the thing that you most need to do. That's why I allowed that to happen in your life. Anyhow, that's part of our daily vimohan. But it's part of the process. There is beauty in the messiness, as we say. So, Sanatana Goswami will give many layers of meaning, many or. So, the first one, after this introduction, he paraphrases Brahma. Brahma says through the lips, lotus lips of Sanatana Goswami, O Krishna, O you who are dedicated to revealing your unlimited Godhood, only you know everything. Only you know alone, you alone know your greatness, since you are omniscient. All this with the word sarvadrik and so on. Or, the implication is, although you are the seer of all, do you know it all? With the modulation of the voice, Brahma is saying that. Like, in the sense is, no, you don't know it all because your greatness is unlimited. The same point we made the other day. And this verse in Shastra making this point. You are omniscient, yes, but your glories are unlimited. And always growing and expanding. So somehow your omniscience is kind of trying to keep up, if you will. But the Bhagavatam says over and over again, Krishna himself cannot fathom fully the degree of his glories because they are in constant evolution, if you will. And Brahma says, thus, since you are unlimited, when you yourself cannot fathom your own glories. So now Brahma goes to him and says, since you are unlimited, I mean, what can I do about that unlimitedness? I cannot praise you. I've tried my best for a few verses, but I mean, it's embarrassing. Just 40 verses and you're unlimited. So since you are unlimited, I cannot praise you. That's his, like, in full humility, his conclusion. So give me permission to leave. like implying I won't continue opening my mouth. But in order to perfect bhakti by giving up my pride, before leaving, I offer everything to you. Whatever I have, this universe. And my sense of possessiveness with that. So that's one first layer of reading of this verse according to Sanatana Goswami. How? Like a more general interpretation of the verse. Let's go to the second one. Now Sanatana Goswami says, or Krishna may say at this point, again, Krishna not saying anything, but it's may say. Like some, oh Brahma, you said you wanted to take birth here in Braj. Some verses ago, Brahma cried and prayed and longed and begged for even as a dust or any species whatsoever in the Braj, even like one stone in which the people of Braj like clean their feet before entering their house, taking out the dust. Let me be that. Some connection with these Brajavasis. So Brahma say, Krishna says to Brahma, according to Sanatana Goswami, may say, you say you want to take birth here in Braj, so why do you want to go away? Now you're asking for permission to leave, but you say you want to be here eternally. So again, Krishna is like, guru disciple. And Brahma replies here to that possible question. Or again, many of the things are questions that come in Brahma's mind. Krishna may ask me that, and therefore I have to clarify this. And Brahma replies to that question, why you are want to leave? I cannot, I don't deserve to stay here in this devata body, this body of a demigod, with four heads. This is one reason. I have three extra heads and a few weird things with my body. It's not a body suitable for the daily dynamics here. Also, another reason why Brahma is leaving, although he may like to stay there forever, also you're eager to enjoy with your Brajavasis under the control of their prem. So Brahma is having a good understanding of what's going on. Oh Krishna, the only one who is dear to the people of Braj. That's one meaning of Krishna. The only one who is dear to the people of Braj. The all attractive. You know that I cannot stay here. I mean, you want to continue your picnic. Remember, everything was interrupted in one sense. You want to resume your lila with your friends. I mean, I cannot be here. You have to continue. However, you know I cannot stay here. However, I offer everything to you for the fulfillment of my prayer. He already prayed for something and he longed for something and he's trying to further make that case. But only you are the master of the worlds. And I don't even have the conceit of doing the offering, actually. Thus, I also offer you my act of offering. So again, Brahma is like totally possessed by very intense humility, crying and feeling totally unworthy before Krishna in connection to the Brajavasis. I say, I cannot even offer you this universe, but it's yours already. I offer you the act of offering. Everything that I can offer and dedicate to you, I'm trying to do that. No? He's kind of obsessed with that, in that spirit, if you will. Trying to get Sarvupada Vinir Muktam as free as he can from all these designations. I'm Brahma, and I'm big, and I'm the lord of that, or trying to get rid from that as much as he can. Muktirhi tvanyatarupam. And finally, Sanatana Goswami says, or Krishna may say, another thing that Krishna may say to Brahma, or at least in his mind, oh Brahma, you are lord of the universe because you created it. So why do you resort to this kind of meekness? Oh, and Krishna may reply in a mugdata way, like naive way, like, I'm just a boy in the forest here and you are Brahma, lord of the universe. So you created the universe, right? To that Brahma replies, no. You are the lord of the universe. I'm just a servant. So Krishna is giving Brahma a chance of establishing himself further, settling himself further in his Siva Abhiman. I'm not the lord of anything. I'm just a servant. To this Krishna may reply, But it is seen that the world, this world, is composed of your offspring, no? Your child, children, your grandchildren. You are the original one, and everyone comes from you. Therefore, it's ruled by you, right? I mean, you are a pretty important guy, it seems. Brahma replies, "You actually offered this universe to me. I'm not the Lord, but it appears that as though it is superintended by me only by the magnanimity of your offering. I'm just an instrument, a puppet. You gave me the ingredients. I'm not creating anything. I'm not controlling anything. I'm just trying to do this in yours. I'm your servant." So in this way, Brahma is again reaffirming his dasya. Because again, as we say, although you want Sakya, although you want Madhurya, dasya is the foundation of all that. All these other aesthetic sacred raptures, as Guru Mahārāja would like to call them, they are forms of dasya in one sense. They are forms of rendering anukul seva, favorable, give favorable pleasure to the object of our love. It may take the form of vatsalya, sakya, whatever, but dasya has to be there. So Brahma wants sakya, but here is insisting on his dasya. Not because he was Dasya Rasa in Vrindavan, but as Brahma, his post is called Adikrita Das, which is assigned servant. His service, he's doing all this architectural service, engagement in the service of Krishna, original. So it's not because he's fixed eternally in Dasya Rasa, but he's engaging in that as a servant. But again, being aware, this is not my world, these are not my ingredients, the whole world is for you. Srinivas Suri, another commentator, makes this point by quoting Mahabharata. He will say, he paraphrases Brahma saying to Krishna, "This the world is offered to you. The world is one shesh, or one of your parts, one aspect of your energy, which means it exists for your sake." So Brahma is re-establishing this principle. The world exists for the sake of its owner, its master, basically. And that was said, and he quotes Mahabharata, "Krishnasya hi kriti bhutam idam vishvam characharam." The universe exists for Krishna's sake. Mahabharata 2.8.23. So the whole universe, that's the purpose of that. So Brahma is pounding on that post over and over. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary and then to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to conclude. So Sri Jiva says in his Lagu Vaishnava Tosani, in making his request to depart, here Brahma reveals bhakti endowed with humility, which will be the cause of his attaining the Lord. So again, Jiva Goswami makes a similar point to Sanatana Goswami. In connection to, Sanatana Goswami said, Brahma is devoid of all pride by the grace of Krishna. And Jiva Goswami said, that humility, or lacking of pride, if you will, combined with bhakti, will be the cause of Brahma attaining Bhagavan, which means he will attain him. And it all began by Krishna's giving grace of freeing Brahma from all pride. And that was the required process for eventually attaining him. So bhakti mixed with humility, that's the sweetest and most effective combination. Bhagavan can be attained by that. That's the way. Of course, when he says, "I only can be attained by bhakti," he implies humility. It's not that. He didn't say humility, so I can just attain him by bhakti, full of pride. That's not bhakti. No, that's not bhakti. Technically speaking, one thing cancels the other. I remember once someone asked, Guru Maharaj, we were sitting in I remember Archana City's place in North Carolina at that time, in the porch. Guru Maharaj was sitting on this, how do you say, rocking chairs. And we were sitting there on his feet. Someone asked, "Guru Maharaj, so how transcend pride being a devotee? What's the formula? How to do it? It's so difficult." And he replied, he said, it's not easy, it's not difficult, he said. It should be easy because bhakti is grace. Grace means grace. It's not your own merit. So you are receiving a gift that doesn't belong to you, that you do not earn, you have not earned. So how can you become proud of things that come from a gift? Of something that is not you, it's not yours. It's all something that is being bestowed on you. So if you keep in mind the nature of bhakti as a gift, you cannot become proud, basically. That was his reply. Which of course makes perfect sense, and that's a basic logic, of course. From that to practice may be difficult for some of us, but it's important to have that underlying theory, if you will. Like, bhakti is a gift, and I cannot become proud of something that came as a result of grace, came from above, without deserving that. So in that sense, bhakti and humility are even kind of synonymous, in one sense. Of course, you can show some form of humility without bhakti in this world, but we will say that's not the full face of humility. Full face of humility and full face of bhakti are one and the same, if you will. Whereas Sanatana Goswami will say they are cause and effect of each other. Humility fosters bhakti, bhakti fosters humility, if you will. Different ways to put that. But it's an important, effective, powerful combination. This, I think, it was Saint Augustine in Christianity. He was asked, like, what's the key for advancing in spiritual life or something like that? He said three things. He said, first, humility. Second, humility. And third, humility. That was his reply. He made the point, no? Stuna nikanananya, he pounded the post. Harinam, harinam, harinam. Humility, humility, humility. Every time you say harinam, it has to be accompanied by humility. Harinam, harinam. Anyhow, Jiva Goswami continues. He does requests, no? After revealing Brahma, after revealing bhakti with humility. In that humility, he calls Krishna, Krishna. That's the name, one name here. All attractive, and Krishna also in this case means whose form and qualities attracts all senses. So, O Krishna, allow me to depart. So the implication is, Brahma is asking to leave, but he's calling him Krishna, who attracts one's senses. So like implying, I'm very attracted to you and to all this, but at the same time I'm asking to leave. So of course, it seems to be contradictory, but we already explained why, and now Jiva Goswami will further explain. He says, a permission to leave is requested here by Brahma, not by Brahma's own desire. No, it's not like, I want to leave this place. But simply because he feels unworthy of residing in Braj. Although attracted to be there. And that feeling of his, Jiva Goswami adds, is due to the fact that Krishna remained silent. Although Brahma had divulged, expressed his request to him. In Krama Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami will say something similar to the word sarvam. Or sarvam means you know everything. The sense with that word is, according to Jiva Goswami, one of them is, if you don't verbally allow me to stay here, why would I stay? You know everything, but you don't say anything. So, if you are not telling me, I already say I would like to stay here forever. You don't say anything. It means I shouldn't stay. And it's Krishna's correct. Brahma shouldn't stay yet. Yet. He will stay, but it's not the moment. So that's how Brahma is also interpreting Krishna's silence. I made my point, but... So Jiva Goswami then say, with the word, you know everything, another explanation he gives, Brahma also implies, what I told you till now, so far, is a useless repetition. And what I could say at this time, too, will be a useless repetition. I don't want to continue speaking. Don't repeat myself. I already spoke, you didn't say anything. I think that's enough. No? The meaning is, Jiva Goswami said, you, not I, already know everything, Brahma is saying. You know about your magnificence, your own magnificence, Brahma is saying to Krishna. You know about my own so-called magnificence, or who am I. You know about your own mysterious pastimes, and you know about my lack of qualification. So Brahma has this clear, you know everything, which means you know that I'm not ready to stay here. And that's probably why you are not saying anything, by inviting me to leave through your silence. But not to leave as rejected, but go and engage in bhajan. And see you soon here, over there, eventually. So the gist of that, Jiva Goswami says, is that Brahma is implying, without your command, I am unable to achieve the good fortune of the Vrajavasis, even as a blade of grass. Because he prayed, even as a blade of grass, let me be born here with full humility. So if you don't give me the order, you don't give me permission or the blessing to stay here, I cannot, even if I would like, I cannot just like force my way into the Vraj. And remember, Krishna is Brahma's guru. So also Brahma is making this point. We need the grace of Sri Guru, we need the grace of the sadhus to attain such a land. We cannot just like, as Guru Maharaj will say, go with our shoes on. Or in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, you need the visa. That will come from those who live on that place you want to go. You cannot just self-invoke your own visa or something. So again, Krishna is Brahma's guru. And Krishna's silence shows it's not yet the moment. It's time to go and engage in bhajan. Thank you for your prayers. Very nice. Everything clear now. Walk the talk. Or sit the talk. Sit down and engage in all those things. So Krishna's silence is, again, to increase Brahma's humility at this point, to make him aware of the necessity of sometimes close our mouth, close the door and do bhajan. And he, meanwhile, is making all the arrangements, invoking the necessary humility and so on. And let's go to the last paragraph of Jiva Goswami, with the word Tvam Eva, in this verse, Tvam Eva. Here Brahma means, says, according to Jiva Goswami, I cannot give up my position as a creator of the universe, since you have offered this universe to me. I must carry out this order as a servant. Like implying, I cannot just stay here and neglect my functions. No, I have to continue doing that as a service. No, I have to increase my sense of servanthood. And if you say, if Krishna will say to Brahma, again, he's not saying anything, but he will say, how can you ask permission to leave, Brahma, without my again seeing the boys and caps which you stole? No? Krishna made a joke to Brahma, like, with Brahma, you kidnapped my friend. He didn't, but Krishna may say, you are asking to leave, but you kidnapped my friends and caps, you know, and I'm not seeing them. Where are they? Krishna's still like, he's Narlila looking with the morsel of food. Right? And Brahma's praying and crying and falling Krishna away. So if you will say that, which of course Krishna won't say anything, but Brahma say, if you will say that, Jiva Goswami say, then I say that you know everything, Sarvadrik, and you see everything. You do not have to be informed by me about where they are. And Brahma himself doesn't know where they are. He's totally collapsed. He thought he knew, but as we know, Vimohan. So in that way, Brahma is making his case for, I think it's time to leave, and I should leave and continue with my proper duties and engagements and stirring the dal and turning, boiling the milk before attaining such a goal. Okay. So let's conclude with Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Salartha Darshini commentary, which will be also very, very interesting. And it says like this. Again, we're creating his classical in-between dialogues between Krishna and Brahma, at least on the mind of Brahma, if you will, in this case. So remember last verse that we saw yesterday, Brahma was acknowledging his ignorance. I know that I don't know. So in connection to that previous verse, Krishna replied here, in connection to Brahma's acknowledging his own ignorance very well. No? Perhaps you do not know the full extent of my power and opulence, like Brahma said in the previous verse. Still, Krishna may say, I do not know the full extent of your power and opulence either. So Krishna, especially in the commentary of Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, through all many verses, Krishna will reply many times to Brahma like that, no? Like in Mukdata, which means like naivety, like, I don't know, but maybe you don't know who I am, but you are Brahma, you're such a person, maybe I'm not aware who you are. Expecting such a crooked response, Brahma speaks here while implying, should I answer to this? But Brahma is so embarrassed at this point. Should I continue speaking? Should I answer to this question? Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, embarrassed, distraught, and incapable of answering anymore, Brahma speaks this verse. Please grant me permission to leave. That's the only thing Brahma can say, basically. The gist of this is, Brahma is implying, I am extremely low and unworthy of staying in this place, Braj, even for a moment. As I am most fallen, I should go to a suitable fallen place, like Brahma Lok. Oh, Krishna. Of course, Brahma Lok is not generally known as a fallen place, but if you put that on one side of the scale and Braj on the other, well, it may be, at least according to Brahmas. No? All of Braja on earth seems to be below Brahma Lok, if you want to see it in those terms. Brahma is realizing, I'm so fallen. I thought I was the highest guy in the whole universe, and I'm realizing the opposite. So Brahma is totally embarrassed and just saying, I don't feel I can stay here even for a moment. For a moment, it's too much. It's too much being here. I need to be a place where I deserve, if you will, according to my present situation. Again, he would like to be there, but... And he calls him in Krishna, which again, Krishna means, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, here the word Krishna means, oh Krishna, please attract my mind and heart to Vrindavan. Although I feel I have to leave this place as soon as possible because of my unworthiness, Krishna, no? So, please, you are the all-attractive, the all-attractor, also the all-attracted, but in this case, I'm leaving Vrindavan, but in such a way that please make me return and return for the rest of forever. Like this t-shirt, I lost my heart in Vrindavan. We have to do a new one which says Brahma lost his heart in Vrindavan. That's a t-shirt for our Brahma Stuti series. So he's leaving Vrindavan, but actually he's more and more attracted to his prospect of remaining in Vrindavan forever. But he needs, again, some distance. He feels he needs some distance at this point to properly honor and appreciate what's this Braja Tattva. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying his famous poem, Pujala Ragapata Gaurava Vange. Srila Srimaraj would say, that's Bhaktisiddhanta Bhani. The real existence of Bhaktisiddhanta is there. Pujala Ragapata Gaurava Bhangi Matala Hariyan Visaya Rangi. Gumash always likes to explain this verse very nicely, and he did in his Sakyamandal, the explanation to verse 32. Ahobhagyam, he had an appendix in his book that he will connect that verse with Pujala Ragapata, this verse in which Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, as you may know, he ordered to chant when the deities were moved to the Bhagavasar Gaudiya Math, which basically means we worship the path of Raganuga Bhakti with reverence. It's not that we want to worship Krishna in reverence, but we worship the path of passionate love with reverence. We show some, if you will, aishwarya towards the madhurya of Raj. And by doing that properly, the distance that worship is creating will be breached, and eventually we will find ourselves members of that land. Somehow Brahma is feeling that need here. No, I need to take some distance from the brush and worship this ideal above my head properly, so gradually that makes me return here with my proper attitude there. Brahma continues, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I have prayed that you make me a blade of grass in Gokul. Verse 34, he asked for that, even as a blade of grass. Although he wants Sakya, but he's in humility, even a blade of grass. Yet you did not respond, so be it, tatastu. You did not say anything like that, nor did you acknowledge it, like verbally, yes. Even by an ocular sign, Brahma is saying, like, some mudra, whatever. So no sign whatsoever of confirmation. So what I'm doing here, Brahma says. Again, he's not reclaiming or criticizing Krishna. He's just acknowledging the fact that, okay, there's no feedback coming from. So what I'm doing is still here. It is better that I quickly go away, for I have become an offender by interrupting your lunch pastimes on the bank of the Jamuna. Brahma steals again, deep repentance, humility, feeling I engage in Leela Aparat, interrupting the picnic, and Rupa Aparat, thinking your form was an imposter-like Parikar Aparat, trying to kidnap your associates. My God. Because of this, Brahma concludes, because of interrupting your picnic, I could not taste the nectar of even one word from your lips. That's why you not even one single drop of nectar comes from your mouth in the form of one word, one sign, because I offended your Leela, your friend. Therefore, I will quickly depart and go far away. Brahma Lok. So again, Brahma's feelings here, I'm disturbing Krishna with my presence and with all these words that I have been expressing, all this prayer, blah, 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 blah. Brahma feels it was just a blah, blah, blah. It was not, but again, in his subjective humility, it's okay that he feels that. Mm-hmm. Krishna is not feeling it was nonsense, it was useless, but all this is taking Brahma to this, again, upgraded humility that is so required for attaining what Brahma wants to attain, that requires so much humility, as we said yesterday. So, given this, Brahma considers it's better to disappear now. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues, paraphrasing Brahma. Now, Brahma speaks to Krishna, now please reclaim your cups and continue your bhojan lila. Bhojan means eating, so your picnic. Please continue your bhojan lila with your dear friends, including the good fun of making jokes and laughing with them on the riverbank. Like implying, oh, that was nice, that was interesting, I would like to engage in that, but I cannot yet, but you please continue with that. Why should I recklessly repeat my request again and again? So that's how Brahma is completely extreme humility, no? Extreme Trinada Pisanichi, no? He's showing this standard here. If you want to reach Prem, Brahma wants to reach Prem, you have to go through the third verse of Shikshastakam, which means Nishta. No, Nishta is not that easy. It's not that you wake up every morning for Mangalarti without fail for 4 decades. I mean, great, but that's external nishta. But internally, there has to be nishta and all these qualities to a certain degree of exhibiting those qualities. Humility, like the grass. That's not just a poetic device. Okay, let's find some example. The tree, tolerance, the grass. Oh, really? That's why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, if you want to attain Prem through chanting Harinam, you have to chant Harinam in the spirit of this third verse of Shikshastakam. There's no shortcut, he's saying, to this. You have to chant to reach the stage of chanting in this type of humility. That will take you to Prem. Again, not to feel discouraged, but just to be realistic about what's the price to reach there. Again, costless mercy doesn't mean priceless mercy. Something is expected from us. We have to be willing and ready to pay the price. At least, if we are not willing and ready, it's okay, but we shouldn't expect something extra if we are not willing to do our part. At least we should remain quiet. If I'm not willing to do my part, I shouldn't over expect something that is not coming just because I'm not doing my part and I'm not showing I actually want that. So Brahma is accepting all this, and he wants Braja Prem and he will attain Braja Prem, but again, the process is shown very exemplarily here. Before him attaining that Braja Prem, he's going through this extreme humility necessary of intermediate journey, nishtha, that is showing, oh, you are on your way to Prem. Again, it's just a matter of time. Krishna is not saying anything, but he's like, okay, nice humility. Just a time, matter of time. So Brahma concludes, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Narayana says, indeed, speaking to Krishna, you know everything about my mind, body, and senses. Just because I created this universe does not mean that I am its master. You are the master, not only of this one universe, but of all universes. No, like the example is, if you paid someone to build a house, it doesn't mean that they are the owner of the house. They build the house. You provide the ingredients, they build the house. So Brahma is kind of that. He's the builder, the architect, the designer, but it doesn't mean he's the owner. Therefore, he concludes, I now offer to you this insignificant universe. Remember, it's smaller by comparison, and Brahma as well. So I offer to you this insignificant universe, which is your property to begin with. So, how much I'm offering this? I mean, it's actually yours. Please do with this universe whatever you wish. Again, Brahma is not offering the universe per se. He's offering himself through what he thought it was his. He's offering himself, his sense of self, his ego, through the offering of the universe. Because that's bhakti, that's the idea. In bhakti, you are not off. Ideally, in Suddha Bhakti or Uttam Bhakti conception, we do not offer to Krishna things that we think are ours, but we are the offering. So the idea is we first offer ourselves, and whatever you do will become prasad, because you are already offered. It's not so much that I offer things to Krishna, but I do not offer myself. So I offer you this, and I offer you that, and I offer you that, and Krishna will ask, and what about yourself? That's the offering. So Brahma has this clear and tries to offer himself through the universe he's offering. By surrendering himself, all sense again of mamata, possessiveness, proprietorship, and so on. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned this idea of sarga and bisarga. Remember, sarga means the main creation, and visarga means secondary creation. So main creation is performed by Krishna, in the sense of he's the one providing the ingredients. He's not even creating the ingredient from zero. Our doctrine is not creatio ex nihilo, that there was nothing, and on the second day there was something. But all that exists, he's the provider, if you will. And Brahma is visarga, engaged in visarga, in secondary creation, which means he does something with those ingredients that he's provided by Krishna. So he's just manipulating, if you will, the ingredients that were provided by Krishna, using them. But by, again, acknowledging this, Krishna is, Brahma, sorry, is surrendering any slight trace of ego that may still be there as, I did it. I am the protagonist. I am the I want to put my signature. So many times we know Krishna is the source of everything and we want to be his instrument, but sometimes we'll like to put our signature and plagiarize Krishna's own creation, all those things that belong to Krishna. And I did it, it's mine, it's my spotlight here. One round of applause for me, please. Thank you so much. But it's not the idea, Everything belongs to him. So all the applauses should go to him. That's kirtan. Kirti means fame. All fame goes to the center. I don't want applause for me. It's not that I do kirtan, I would like after the kirtan some applause for the kirtaniya. You didn't do any kirtan then. Because the idea was, kirtan means you are trying to direct all the attention and all the energy to the center. All fame, all recognition is, let's recognize how glorious is Krishna, how beautiful. That's expanding the fame of Krishna. So anyhow, some words regarding today's penultimate verse, and tomorrow in our last verse, although it won't be the last class, as I said, we may have a few two more classes of like conclusion of the whole chapter, because there are some verses after the end of Rama Sutta in the chapter itself. But in the next verse, tomorrow, the last verse of the Rama Sutta, Brahma will conclude his prayers basically in the same way, if you will, he began the whole Stuti, which is not the same verse, but in the same mood, which is humbly praising Krishna, humbly praying to Krishna, describing, like summarizing what he said as well. You are the delighter of your devotees, you are the delight, especially Brajavasi, the delighter of everyone else. You are the dispeller of all darkness and all impiety. And Brahma is feeling, I need all that. No, I need that you show all those qualities in relation to me, please. And therefore you are worthy of being worshipped by all, especially by me. I need to worship you properly. And he concludes, as we'll see tomorrow, that as long as the sun shines, I offer my pranam to you. No, like implying, the sun always shines, so I would like to enter into that permanent, perpetual dynamics of worship and loving service. So that will be tomorrow. So we'll conclude here. But I don't know if there are any questions before we finish, and comments or whatever you may like to share. You have some?
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's kind of connected to Brahma realizing that he has nothing and offering himself, but back to the japa retreat.
Okay.
The day you were talking about it, that we're not the chanter of the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing I don't really understand what that means.
What will Bhakti Rasa say in reply? What does it mean?
That we can't call the name or force the name to come to us. That the name is it's already there, and the name is actually, I think Gurmukha said this, is kind of chanting us. Anything that we can do is kind of already there. It's a...
So like I'm just, in a sense, offering myself, and I'm willing to be here and open my mouth and...
There's a river and you're getting into it.
There is a current in the river.
Yeah.
You just don't swim against the current. Yeah, of course, with this we are not promoting some form of passive thing that I'm not the chanter, so I'm not doing anything. I'm just like, I don't express my will, because we explained that we have to individuate ourselves and we have to become individuals. But the idea is, again, not when we approach the chanting or the name, we are approaching Krishna, who is not different from the name. So, the idea, if I'm the chanter, the point is I'm taking more like a more subjective position, like I am going out to chant, and as Bhakti Rasa said, that it doesn't depend on you in one sense. I mean, you have to do your part, but it doesn't mean that that's all that it is. No? Actually, that's a small part in comparison to the main contribution coming from above. So yeah. To not be the chanter means not to engage, not to address the practice like thinking I'm in control of the situation, or like I have the driving wheel, you say, in my hands, no? But there's someone else driving the whole thing, but I'm the co-driver, if you will, and I have to do something also. I have to pay attention to some things or something. But...
Like you talk about, we do our part, Krishna does.
Yeah, I'm trying to surrender... Or again, not there are stages of that. At the highest stage, you have your own desires, spiritual desires, and the devotees in the Leela even may do things that Krishna doesn't agree with, but the gopas will enter into the mouth of Agasura nonetheless. But you just can't imitate that immediately. So sometimes we need to first try to be instrument and try to set aside for a minute my my expectations of what I think it should happen and surrender to what's going on. And in that sense, I'm not the chanter, no? Like, again, let Krishna chant through me. Let's be an instrument. As we say, the ones who praise becomes a prayer, no? So you cannot remain. It's interesting because even grammatically speaking, there's no word for prayer and the one who is praying, because there's no way, you cannot do that by keeping that separate sense of identity. You have to fully enter there. And in that sense, you are not the chanter. You are the chant. You are not the prayer man. You are the prayer. So you cannot keep like, but I am the chanter, but I'm the one praying. No. Something else is like transpassing you, basically. No? And you are being instrumental. You are an instrument of that grace, as we read the other day when Prabhupada prayed when he was in Boston. He say, let me dance and dance and dance according to your wish, and I'm your pup. And that doesn't mean you are being not expressing yourself and not being an individual. That requires pretty much of investing your individuality to say that, to reach that point, to express yourself, to offer yourself in that way. It's not that you are not taking responsibility for yourself and I'm just an instrument, do whatever you like. To really reach that point of saying that, I mean, you have to really invest your own individuality in that. And of course, something will happen in reply to that, and so many other things will come after. But yeah, that may be basically the idea. Not, how do you say? Hanging? No. Like hanging? Clinging?
Clinging
to this ego of I am the chanter. Again, like if you will be doing kirtan, you are not the main character of the whole event. No? Some say, well, now comes a famous kirtaniya, whatever, but that kirtaniya, if he or she's real kirtaniya, they won't think like, now comes the show and I'm the central person here. Central is none. And I'm just trying to be a proper vessel for that to express itself through me. In that sense, I am not the chanter. But of course, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be responsible and do our part. No? So we have to accommodate all these possibilities. Okay, something else? Okay, so I think we will conclude here. And pranam to all devotees connected there. Lisa is sending prayers also. Thank you. Okay, see you tomorrow for the last verse of Ramastuti. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shashi Dauji Gopal ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahmastuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand Haribo.